Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you your daily dose of all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Friday, July 10th, and today on the show, we've got two special guests, the return of Tony Serino after missing his Tony Tuesday, and of course, Adam Crowley from the Adam Crowley Show on ESPN Pittsburgh Radio and former host of the Locked On Steelers podcast. So we've got three Locked On Steelers hosts, current and former, that are on the show with us today. We talk about some comments from Steelers linebacker Devin Bush and engage in the conversation of the battles that are going on between the NFL's players and the NFL's owners. What side are you on? What's the discussion like? We explore several different elements that play into how the league could move forward. Then it's Fantasy Draft Friday. The guys and me, we all pick our best Steelers plays of all time, where you, the fans, will decide who won by going on to the Locked On Steelers Facebook group and voting. Voting goes from 9 a.m. Friday morning to 7 p.m. Sunday evening Eastern time. Subscribe to the Locked On Steelers podcast on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are hosted. Please leave a 5-star review with a positive comment on Apple Podcasts, and doing so will get you a shout-out at the end of the show. Today's show is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit RockAuto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Let's get into it. All right, everyone, it's Friday. We made it to the end of the week. Let's celebrate with a Fantasy Draft Friday episode. You guys know me. I'm Chris Carter. This is the Locked On Steelers podcast. But today, we've got two guests. Now, we missed out on some Tony Tuesday this week, so we've got Tony Serino back in the fold. Tony, how you doing, my man?
Doing great. Happy to be here. I need to win this week, guys. I need this win.
But also, we have not just a returning guest, but a returning host, one of the OGs of the Locked On Steelers podcast, the man himself, Adam Crowley, the host of the Adam Crowley Show on ESPN Pittsburgh Radio. Adam, how you doing?
Doing okay. I'm all right with being here, and I just hope to get this over with.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Yeah, he's like, I just hope to get this over with.
Let's just get this over with.
I hear you. Adam told me, y'all, he's hyped about Fantasy Draft Friday because he hasn't gotten to play yet. He heard Wes had played and he was jealous, so I wanted to get him on the show.
That's the surest way to get me to do anything is to tell me that Wes did it, and then I try to do better than him.
Now I just got to get Tom twice, and then you're both going to get mad. But anyways, let's talk about the new subject that I'm going to bring up. And this is basing off of it. If you listen to yesterday's episode, I was talking about just the NFLPA's response to the NFL's proposal to put 35% of players' 2020 salaries in escrow. And by and large, players were like, get out of my face with that. Some of them called it a pay cut, even though it's technically not a pay cut. It's just taking your pay and moving it to another year. There's that whole discussion. But the bottom line was that in general, players were just thinking this was kind of that was stupid. They take a lot of the hits anyways. They just did a CBA where they basically gave the owners everything that they wanted, and now here they are, the owners coming back to them and said, hey, okay, can you sacrifice some of your money this year? And it got interesting. But what sparked after that were some discussions from a tweet storm that kind of came from Devin Bush, Steelers second year linebacker. They're a guy that they traded up to get last year. You all know him. And he started tweeting out initially, and he tweeted out, his first tweet came after like the news broke about the 35% offer. And his first tweet says, them boys tried us with a 35% pay cut, and he puts like a laughing emoji. And then, you know, people were, you know, kind of getting on him for that. Then he tweets out the next day. He says, I'm not asking for sympathy. All I'm asking for is what I earned. Then he tweets out again the same day, we should get bonuses for playing on holidays as well. I like Thanksgiving and Christmas too, with a shrug emoji. Then he continues saying, I'm an entertainer. I give you my 1,000% effort every game, every play. I train my butt off every offseason. I sign jerseys. I do appearances. I take photos with your children. It's my job. I love my job.
but don't tell me how I should feel about it unless you are in my shoes. And he tweets again, homeboy pulled up to the Super Bowl in a $300 million yacht, but not me. I flew just like everybody else. And then, you know, he got some retweets and he was talking about them. And then he put, and then today he put just a shaking my head emoji, or when he, you know, the Picard where he just puts his palm, face palm. There you go. That's what I'm talking about. Puts his palm in his face just because he sees all the responses. But so this sparked a lot of people were saying like, oh, he was ungrateful or he's not being humble. So that sparked some interesting discussions. I want to start with you, Tony.
Yeah.
Seeing all this, and this is a common debate, you know, do athletes, you play a sport and you make more money than any of us. Where did you fall in seeing these comments coming from Devin Bush, a second year player?
Yeah, I mean, look, I understand where Devin's coming from, obviously, right? And this is like, this is like one of those collective bargaining things between the players and owners. And fans love to get involved in that and tell the players, like, you know, you make too much money and whatnot. And look, the owners make, everyone in these sports make too much money, right? I mean, think about, you know, the contract that they just gave Patrick Mahomes. It's ridiculous. But, you know, when you consider that against what the owners are making, obviously Patrick Mahomes isn't being overpaid. What I don't understand about this debate, though, I don't even know if it's a debate, right? This criticism is like, this is the NFL and the players trying to work out what's going to happen next year, when we all know, like, if there's no fans in the stands in 2020, the salary cap is going to go down in 2021. And so what does that mean for the NFL, and how do they hedge against that? And this was an option for the NFL, clearly one that did not go over well for the players, obviously, right? Because it does, I mean, I know you said it's not a pay cut. It's not, but it is in effect a pay cut, right? Because their pay for this year will be 35% less, and then they can pay that out over time, you know, down the line. Right. So I understand Devin Bush. I understand the NFL. What I don't understand is people going after Devin Bush or saying he's ungrateful or any of that. Look, this is a thing that the NFL and the players have to work out. They got to figure out what they're going to do when that salary cap goes up or goes down, excuse me, because there's gonna be a lot of teams that are going to be in trouble. The Pittsburgh Steelers being chief amongst them. Let's not forget Ben Roethlisberger's salary cap hit in 2021 is $41 million. And you know, that's not going anywhere. So yeah, I mean, this is a dispute between the players and the NFL. And I think this is one of those cases. And look, I know fans are gonna have opinions about everything, but like, you know, this is when I think fans probably need to sit this one out.
Adam, you and I have talked about this a lot off air, where, you know, you once called me a bootlicker because I was setting you up for a 13-9 joke, when you thought I was signing up with the owners. But you and I are both pro players in these type of debates.
Yeah.
What was your response to seeing how all this goes down? Because it wasn't just fans also responding. There were members of the media that were also kind of chiming in and kind of goading Devin Bush to go further with his point.
Well, of course there were. It's very frustrating because fans and a lot of media members alike, they're totally fine with a player getting cut with a couple of years left on his deal. They're totally fine if a player has to give back or have 35% of their salary retained. And at the same time, these fans will bend over backwards and they'll pay their tax money for stadiums and they'll help out owners build these stadiums when these owners are multi-billionaires. It's frustrating. I think a lot of it comes from just the jealousy of seeing guys play a sport for a living and they make a lot of money. And really, even the lower paid guys make more money than your average American is really ever going to see in a year. And this makes people jealous. And I think anytime they see a player give that back, maybe it makes them feel okay. And I feel like anytime they see a player complain that they're taking 35% of their money this year, putting it in escrow, well, they still make blah, 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 it's going to irritate fans when these players complain about it, because even with the 35% being taken off the top, they still make more than your average everyday American. But here's a reality that your average everyday American doesn't want to talk about. It ain't just about Sundays.
Right.
Like, Sundays hurt, right? But it's about every other day, mm-hmm. and training camp and the off season and painkiller addiction, right?
Yeah.
And what your brain turns into years after this. So I will always say, even in this circumstance, the cap is going to be a problem, and that's going to ultimately affect players too. But at the same time, if these guys who turn their brains to mush and get addicted to painkillers and spend all their time in the cold tub don't want to give their 35% back right now because they're living in the right now, F the owners, man. I'm fighting for any other possible solution than that. And to all the fans out there who say, Oh, Devin Bush, you ungrateful, blah, blah, blah. Shut the hell up. Devin Bush is trying to make as much money as he possibly can using the tools at his disposal, which is his body. He's only going to be able to do it for a few years before his body ultimately gives out. So let him make his money and shut the hell up.
Where I think there's often a disconnect with the sacrifices argument, because people are talking about how some people are taking pay cuts and to keep their own businesses open and things like that. People are saying, if I can do it, you can do it too. Where I think that people misunderstand is just because if these players agree to this, we as the watchers, as the observers, as the fans, as the reporters, we would not see that money. It goes right into the owner's pockets.
Right.
This isn't like, okay, them doing this is going to give us all stimulus checks right now. There's no tax money that it saves by them doing this. This is simply the owner saying, hey, you know what? We want to make X amount of dollars this year. And if we want to do that, we got to pressure them to give up some money now so we can keep it afloat. And there's the debate of, like Tony brought up, you know, they're worried about the salary cap moving forward. Well, Drew Rosenhaus brought up a very good point. He was talking about, he's like, there's several mechanisms you can employ because we know the revenue is going to skyrocket in the next couple of years. Because this year, if they do play the season, there'll be an extra playoff game or two extra playoff games. And even without that, the next year when we presume things will be able to get back to normal, there will be extra regular season games and extra playoff games. And the revenue from that is going to be insane. And for those who don't know, like the lowest playoff rated game last year was like 30 million people. So like, that all that money that you get from all the advertisers and the contract deals with CBS and Fox and NBC, that's millions upon millions and billions of dollars that's going to be added to the revenue, and that's going to boost the salary cap. And Rosenhaus was, all you got to do is just plan now as the owners to take hits now, so because you know you're going to get a huge amount of money, and then you can use that money that you have that's coming in the future, push it into now, handle it here, and then the salary cap won't grow as quickly, but eventually in 5 years, everything's going to offset itself, and you won't have to, like, basically do fire sales of rosters, because that's what the NFL is threatening. Like, oh,
right,
we don't do this right now, well, guess what? Then all you teams with all of those stars, you're going to start losing them because the salary cap for teams is going to drop significantly, and they don't have to do that. I think this is another ploy of the owners to get people to think that there's no other way other than the players to take a hit. But Tony, go ahead.
But isn't, I mean, I guess I'm going to be like, you know, the guy who sides with the owners in this debate now, which I didn't want to do. Didn't think I was going to be that guy coming in. But here we are. Isn't the reason that the salary cap's going down in 2021 because the total revenue pool is going to be lower, right? Because they're not going to have fans. So like, I think the 35% number, because I remember the NBA, they talked about a potential 40% decrease in the salary cap going into 2021 because there's going to be no fans there, and hey, if we don't play at all, right? That's what they were talking about. So 35% might be what the NFL numbers. I don't know how they arrived at that, but regardless, right? Like, you're talking about these future years. I mean, remember, Chris, like the owners are planning for that already. I think that's one of the big reasons why the Steelers were willing to have this $41 million cap hit on Ben next year, is because everybody thought, and you and I talked about this on the podcast before, everybody thought 2021 was going to be this big jump in the revenue.
Right.
Instead, now we're looking at it going the complete opposite way. And look, it's a bad look for the owners to go to the players and say, hey, you know, everybody take a pay cut for 35%. You know who doesn't want to take a pay cut for, look, Devin Bush is one thing, right? But like the Kareth Whites of the world, like, yeah, you know, those guys, right? I mean, these are guys who are just like, who are fighting for a job and everything. They don't want to hear about, hey, let's protect, you know, the next 5 years of this league by everybody taking a pay cut today. And it's not even a pay cut. I mean, it's not a pay cut. They're going to get paid eventually. But still, right? I mean, those guys do not want to hear it because they don't know that they're going to be in the league a month from now, much less 5 years from now.
I agree. Adam, go ahead. I know you want to chime in here.
Yeah, well, the way I look at it, and trust me, I failed economics at one point at WVU. That's not a surprise. But the way I look at it is, if the Players Association, have agreed to a salary cap, when there's a year where you don't make quite the revenue that you wanted to make, and this year's probably going to fall woefully short of that, then the cap going down, when the cap goes down, is how the players have to wind up feeling the pain there, right? Like, yeah. The owners, okay, the cap goes down, but their revenue also goes down. So they feel that in their pockets. You shouldn't ask the players to give back or to have retained 35% of their salary. Now you've got, if you're the owners, that money. You try to use that or whatever to float the cap the next year, but the players are now hurt because they got to give up the 35% of their salary, and then the cap doesn't go up. It just stays stagnant.
Yeah.
Right. If you're going to take it on the chin, and if you're part of a players association that's cool with a cap, like the NFLPA is now at this point, well, when you take it on the chin, it should just be by the salaries not going up because the cap's not going up. That's the way I think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I do agree that there's that level of the salary cap itself, and everyone's talking about that. I see this as a ploy, because how these negotiations always happen is that the owners frame the conversation. They're the ones that say, listen, there's no other way for this to happen. Either this happens or the world ends, or there's no football, or teams are going to have to be stripped apart. And like, you know, them saying basically the nuclear option is the only other option. But if the players call their bluff and be like, we're not budging, I bet you they find a way to make it work. And I bet you the owners in this situation, especially the owners of the big organizations, the crown jewel organizations like the Cowboys, like the Patriots, they're going to be like, listen, we got some guys on our team that we ain't trying to lose because we're trying to load up right now. We don't want this salary cap to drop ridiculously. Let's find a way to make it work. We couldn't make it work with the players. Let's try to make it work this way. Because they at least want to be able to keep some of their stars, because they're looking at the situation. And I'm not saying all owners think that way, because obviously the Dan Snyders of the world could care less about the talent on their team. But but when it comes to the some of the teams, I mean, the Steelers would be chief among them. It's like, look, you know, they know they got to sign T.J. Watt. They know they want to keep Cam Hayward. They know that they got to look at options like Juju Smith-Schuster and Bud Dupree, and soon come up with me, Minkah Fitzpatrick, and other players like that. They don't want to be in a position where they have to let, you know, go guys that they plan to be part of their nucleus moving forward. I have to think that this proposal was another one of the moves that they've done, like how they propose, hey, well, what if we get rid of two preseason games? Or, hey, what if we put incentives to hire minority coaches and GMs? A feeler out there to see how the public responds, and then make a move based off of
that. Yep. Totally agree. I don't even know that the NFL actually threw this out there with any expectation that it would be accepted, because again, what is in it for the players to accept this? It doesn't feel like there's anything. So, I mean, I know that the NFL wants to be like, hey, you know, we're all in this together and we're going to help you guys by helping the cap not go down. But there's just too much in the end. It's why the CBA got done, Chris, right? Because the CBA got done because a bunch of the players who were at the bottom of the rung were all like, hey, listen, this sounds good to us. And the players at the top are like, well, let's not do this. There's just not enough of those guys, right? And you know, and I think this can be the same situation where, like, the players are going to look at this and just go, no, thank you. Moving along, let's try the next thing. And the NFL is going to have to come up with another way to make this work.
This is interesting. It's not the most pertinent thing, so I don't want to, like, derail the conversation here. Right. But Jeremy Fowler from ESPN was on with me today, and he said what he's hearing is from – a negotiation standpoint, right, to figure out how to float the cap. It is absolutely a non-starter. That much we know, the 35% escrow thing.
Yeah.
He did say he does not see all of the preseason going away. And I think it's not really anything to do with player 51 through 53 making the roster. It's just about that local TV money and finding a way to get more of that even without the fans in the stand.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I think I just read earlier today, maybe it was yesterday, that the Ravens are looking at, like, hey, you know, we're looking at 14,000 people in the stadium max if we're going to have fans. I think the NFL is still in a position where, like, everyone's thinking you can't have any preseason, you shouldn't have any fans in the stands, but it sounds like the NFL, you know, they're trying to get every penny out of this that they can. So they're looking at, like you were saying, Adam, any way to get even just the local TV money for this, or any sort of, you know, how can we get the fans in the stands but 6 feet apart? I mean, like, any way that they can do this just doesn't seem smart.
Well, and you know, and there's a couple other things too, like advertisements on helmets don't look all that good, but they sure could help you get through a pandemic, and like jersey patches, stuff like that. I mean, I think they've got to be creative if they don't want to totally F the players in the backside. And I'm imagining something like that's what's going to wind up happening.
I you know, the MLS started on Wednesday night, and they well, basically – the MLS, Major League Soccer, Chris.
That's a thing?
Don't start. Where the stands are supposed to be, they put just a bunch of ads there. I mean it was just like the most
ads
you've ever seen. It looked like a NASCAR thing. Yeah, I think you have to wonder if maybe that's something that starts happening. I mean, they CG, like they rendered like an Adidas logo at the midfield point of the soccer stadium. You have to wonder if you start pulling that stuff off on TV as well, just again, to bring in that revenue.
Yeah.
So needless to say, the stands looked pretty much the same as usual though, right?
Here we go. Here we go.
Sorry, moving you walked on. Into that. I wasn't even going to touch soccer this segment. You walked right into this one.
It was turned into the conversation.
But first of all, Adam, strong flex here saying how you brought on Jeremy Fowler onto your show. That's a pretty strong move.
Well, okay, but what happened was, Chris, I don't know if you heard it. Fowler was supposed to come on at 6, and he texted me and he's like, "Yo, I can't. I got to go on SportsCenter."
So he flexed on you.
Yeah, you got big time.
He bumped me for stage steal, and then he came on like 25 minutes late. Is what happened then.
I'm not gonna lie, I'd bump you too for Sage. Sage called yes, I totally get that. I know Jeremy. I'm not sure if you ever come on show because he might still be mad at me at the I once set up a pick in a basketball at a pickup basketball game. He didn't like it too much because I'm fat and I think he didn't realize how running into me would feel. I might not know my own strength. Anyways, odd flex on your part, but good flex though. Just crazy that he was on SportsCenter. But guys, I thank you for contributing this discussion. Where do you guys stand? Seeing as the listeners, you can contact all of us. Post this in the Facebook group by searching Locked On Steelers on Facebook. Ask to join the group. I'll add you as soon as possible, and you can join the over 670 other loyal Steelers fans that are always in there chatting up every day. I think this is a very good discussion that explored where the owners are coming from, where the players are coming from, what the salary cap implications are, and just some of the realities that we all know, like, hey, they're saying this, but you read between the lines, there's these obvious conversations that are happening here. So, again, great conversation. We're going to cut to a break. When we come back, it's Fantasy Draft Friday time. We're doing the all-time best Steelers plays right after this.
Wait, it's not movies part 3?
With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of types of cars, it's impossible for places to keep all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. So why endure the pointless and seemingly intimidating questions that you'll get when you go into a store like, is your car an LX or an EX? And then you have to wait for the counterman to order parts on his computer, and then choosing the only brand that his warehouse happens to carry. You can skip all that. Go to a computer at your own house or your own phone that's in your pocket and go to rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low. And the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And then go and write Locked On for in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. I am joined by Tony Cerrito and Adam Crowley. Now, as you know, we do Fantasy Draft Friday here, where we pick a topic, and then each of us try to pick the five best that we can in fantasy draft picking style, and then we'll debate in the next segment who had the best list. Today's topic are all-time Steelers plays. So, how do you weigh in on this? You go right to that Facebook group I was telling you about in the last segment. Just go on Facebook, search Locked On Steelers, ask to join the group. I'll add you, and then there will be a poll posted up. It's posted there right now this morning. It should be posted up at 9 a.m. Friday. It'll go all the way until 7 p.m. Sunday Eastern time, and then that will determine the winner, and that winner will be announced on the Monday show. Tony, you are the keeper of the standings.
Whew.
What are the standings so far?
The standings currently, Chris is in first place by 2 points. He has 15. I have 13. Then Hunter's team, who Adam is representing today, has 11. So it's tight. It's tight within, everyone within four of you, Chris. I guess I need to win, and I need you to finish in third this week to reclaim the lead, or at least tie for the lead.
Certainly. Adam, just to let you know, no pressure. We now have had two guests come on and win a Fantasy Draft Friday. For a while, it was a drought. And no guests, no people that weren't regulars to the Fantasy Draft Friday system weren't winning. But then Jeff Hartman won one a few weeks ago, and then Joshua Taylor won one last week. So So the pressure's on you. Look, to carry that tradition.
I play for the name on the front, not the name on the back. So I'm all about Team Hunter, and I'm going to do everything I can. But if I lose, you know, I lose as part of this team.
Well said.
Well, you know, you've been hanging around.
What do you mean, well said? What a bunch of crap.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been hanging around the Steelers way too much.
Standard's a standard.
Yeah. Standard's a standard, all that stuff. Okay. Tony.
Yep.
You get the first pick. Adam gets the second pick. I get third. It alternates throughout the rounds. What is your first pick for the greatest play in the history of the Steelers?
So you guys know I like to go off board on these and wild and wacky picks. Not going to do that, at least for this pick. This is what I consider the greatest play in Steelers history. And that is James Harrison's pick six in the Super Bowl. Game-changing play. I'll talk about it more in the next segment. That'll be my first pick.
Bold pick there. Bold pick. Adam, you get the second pick. And this was why first pick was interesting to me, because there's the chalk, then there's kind of like lesser chalk, but I was interested to see where Tony went with that. He went with the recent chalk, one of the plays that people would probably jump at if they're a younger fan.
Well, I got to be honest. I was going to pick that if I was in the pole position. I believe that was – I mean, if you watch it back to – I mean, my God. There's 15 times James Harrison should have not just been tackled, but, like, passed out and died on the field.
Yep.
So that would have been mine. But, I mean, absolutely great value here then, right? Because I would not have picked this first because it didn't lead to a Super Bowl or anything like that. But if I can get immaculate reception with two – the second pick, I can't say goodbye. I got to do it. I got to take immaculate reception.
The immaculate reception goes second pick.
It's totally overrated too, and I know this, but it's number two, so I got to take.
Okay, now a common, we know our buddy Mark Madden of WDV Radio, the 105.9DX. Excuse me, I'm mixing up my radio station. He often says that it was not a catch. And I don't understand his point. You can see the one angle where his hands are under the ball. But I've always wondered, Adam, where do you stand on it? Was it absolutely a catch?
Well, if it hit the defender, then by rule back then, it wouldn't have been a catch. And I think the debate is more about whether or not it hits Tatum, right? But
no, it's about if it hit Fuqua. Because if Tatum hit it,
right,
it's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't think it does. So – it doesn't matter. It counts. It counts either way. So it's special either way. I mean, the Penguins won the Stanley Cup when Colton Sissons pokes at a puck. It should have counted as a goal. And the ref's like, oops, sorry, blew the whistle. But we still count the Penguins winning the Stanley Cup in 2017. So I don't really give a rat's ass whether it hit the ground or it hit the player or whatever. Honestly, I mean, it counted. So there you go.
Well, I was trying to trap you with that and see if you said anything ridiculous. You didn't, though. So good job.
I almost did, and I backed out.
All right, so pick comes to me. I have an obvious pick for my first round. I have to go with San Antonio Holmes in Super Bowl 43. That's just too legendary for me. It's truly spectacular. It cemented the sixth Super Bowl win. And it's just picture perfect. There's so many things about it that's amazing. And it's the last time the Steelers have won a
Super Bowl. Better catch or throw?
To me, I think they're equal. I think the way that San Antonio Holmes had to reach out and extend his full body, I mean, from his toes to his fingertips, to catch it where Ben put it, and Ben putting it over three guys, I that question always gets asked, and to me, they are equally insane in how they happened. I also remember being huddled with like eight other Steelers fans in Yarnell Hall at Cheney University as Eagles Nation was like praying that we lost because they were so tired of us. And I just remember looking around, like, we were dancing and celebrating, and their faces were like, why do they keep winning? Why do they get these Super Bowls? We don't understand. But I gotta go with the Holmes touchdown as my first round pick. But I get to pick my second round pick right after, and this is where it gets interesting, because I could continue to go with Super Bowls. As Tony knows on the show, Adam, I am big on getting rings to my collection, but we're not doing players here. We're doing plays themselves. So, next greatest play in Steelers history. I'm going to go with – oh, this is tough. I'm going to go with Lynn Swann in Super Bowl X.
Mm-hmm.
The levitating leap. Just because I should clarify, the one where he went up between two defenders, because that's even better than the one that everyone remembers where he was just doing it over one guy. But there was his first catch of the game, he's on the sideline, he's being double teamed, Bradshaw throws it like 3 feet over his head, he skies up between the defenders and gets his toes down. That whole performance of his was legendary, but to me that catch is still one of the greatest catches I've ever seen in all of football.
Good pick.
And now, Adam, you get your second round pick.
The Plexico Burris spike fumble against Jacksonville.
Whoa!
Hey, really?
No, I'm not. I'm not picking that one.
Oh, oh my God. I was. You were about to unchuck Tony right there.
You have no idea. My heart sunk. I was like, wait, I have to go crazier than that? It's impossible. What are we
doing? I'll go with one that, well, it's going to get picked. So I'm going to go – I went the immaculate reception. I'll go with the terrible tackle, Ben Roethlisberger taking down the wounded Nick Harper in the divisional round 2005.
Okay.
It's funny remember that he was coming off of a stab wound.
I mean, I don't – you know, Jeremy Tooman says he would have caught him, right? But, if he didn't get stabbed, you know, if Ben doesn't make the tackle and we got full speed Nick Harper, I mean – Jeremy Tooman ain't catching my ass. Like, get out of here.
No, I agree. This is because I was sitting there. I remember him saying that, and I was like, you're not that fast. Like, if that was anybody else, if that was like Randall L. or so, or Hines Ward, I could see that. But Tooman, not really. But a good pick there. Tony, you get the next two picks in the draft.
Okay. Yeah. I do, and there's a couple that slid to me. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the Polamalu pick six in the AFC Championship game against Flacco. Yeah, that's an incredible play. I'll talk more about that in the next segment. I thought my uncle was going to run through the TV. He was trying to run with Polamalu. I think he was going to go through the TV. I'll tell you that story in the next segment. And then I will go with – I want to pick – put together the list, I had to pick a player and then their best player. I didn't want to pick, like, the same player, you know, three times. And you definitely could do that for Antonio Brown. So I wanted to pick Antonio Brown's best play that I thought he had. I'm going to pick it's not a touchdown against the Ravens, but it is, I think, his best play of his career. This is before Antonio Brown was Antonio Brown. This is the divisional round of the playoffs in 2010, the helmet catch that he made on third and 19 late in that game, set up a Steelers touchdown that they would go ahead and win. By the way, they were getting their ass kicked in that game. So the second half of that game is insane, but I will always remember it for AB's helmet catch. So I will take that next,
man. I'm proud of you. Those were definitely solid picks there. I was expecting Devlin Hodges to make an appearance.
Just wait. I got the last pick. No, I don't. It's coming.
I was like, do you know that you picked first?
I don't have the last pick.
But okay. So Adam, we have 7 picks off the board here. We got Harrison's pick 6, the immaculate reception, Santonio Holmes' touchdown, Troy Polamalu's pick 6, Ben Roethlisberger's tackle, Swan in Super Bowl 10, and now Antonio Brown's helmet catch is out. Who do you have with your third round pick?
I think my three favorite plays, like, as a Steelers fan, I was born in 1990, just for reference, are the Harrison pick 6, the Polamalu pick 6. Tony's got both of them. And then I would say this is probably my third the Randall L to Hines Ward Steelers up for Super Bowl 40.
Yep.
That was an ugly Super Bowl too. Like, it was nice. It was nice to see something that was aesthetically pleasing that looks good on like the highlight videos and the slow motion NFL film stuff.
Yeah.
Because holy Christ, was that a bad Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about the only highlight from that game. That the interception from Ike. You know, that's
Willie's run.
Yeah.
Yeah, Willie Parker's run was cool, but I mean that first half was just boring. It was scary because the Steelers weren't doing anything on offense, and you're just like, what is happening? They just threw all over the Broncos. They beat the Colts in the RCA Dome. They won a shootout against the Bengals. What is happening? When it was just such a freakout. So interesting pick there. I like that. I get the next two picks here. Now, I have a lot of reservations about what plays should get higher up, because there's some plays that get ignored, I think, in the long run, even though they did a lot of great things. I love statement plays, though. And I'm going to go with the most vicious play I think I've ever seen. Mm. And it's Ryan Clark decapitating Willis McGahee.
That's not the one I thought you were going to go with. Okay.
There were two. There were two there. And I think one's an offensive player and the other's Ryan Clark.
Yep.
And I know what other one you're talking about, Adam. But this one, it was on the center stage. I remember watching that. Again, I was in that same Yarnell Hall. At Chin University, and I was on the phone with my old man, and I'm like, he's dead. I don't think he's alive. And there's actually a really crazy, so this one guy kept getting live videos. So some lucky jerk, he was in the stands for that game, and he got the live footage of Polamalu's pick six, and I believe it was, he also got the live footage of the McGahee hit and fumble. Well, the Clark hit on McGahee, if you go on YouTube and search those, it's pretty crazy to watch from like the fans, like in the stands perspective. But that hit, I mean, it just set the tone and it ended the game. It was like the Ravens, they were down 9, they were gonna try and make a comeback, and the Steelers were just like, nah, you're not doing that no more. And it was so hard. And to me, you gotta have some big hit plays on all-time Steelers lists when you're talking, because that's just who they are. So, Clark in the AFC Championship game. Man, it's real funny because, Tony, you started to go this way. Mm-hmm. And you picked – I think you got it right about what was his best play, but – I think that maybe you could say equally as good, as a play from Antonio Brown is his immaculate extension.
Yeah, the immaculate extension. Yeah, that was right there. It's like 1A and 1B for me. Right. I have a picture behind me of the AB immaculate extension, but it's a fantastic play. I was, that's a game where, I mean, the Steelers were out of it against the Ravens. They needed that game to win the division. Felt like for the whole game, oh God, this team is really going to lose to the Ravens. They're going to lose the division at home on Christmas Day. And then that last drive, and that last play, incredible.
It was too insane. It was Christmas Day. And like you said, the division was on the line. And if they had lost the division, there was the talk they might not make the playoffs.
Right, right.
So lots of scary stuff there. But just the legend, like, and the fact that he had to go through two guys. It adds to it.
Yeah, and there's an incredible face mask that, of course, they missed it. They just missed it. Just happened to miss that one.
Just happened to. But that's my fourth round pick. Adam, who's your fourth round pick?
Man, I'm having a tough time because I have two plays that happened in regular season games that were really crucial in the Steelers winning the division that I want to go with. Mm-hmm. I know I want to come a little bit weird off the board here. So, but there's a really good value play in here too that we haven't done. Damn it. All right. I want to be weird. I'm going to go value. And I'm going to say Willie Parker's Super Bowl run.
Yep.
Wow, so you're just getting you're getting all the Super Bowl 40 plays.
I know, and I went with Super Bowl 40 in the last one. Like, I really didn't want to go there, but I'm trying. You know, I'm trying to win this for Team Hunter.
FYI, you have now picked three plays that have happened within the same month.
Yeah,
that is a pretty important month.
Great. Adam's favorite month, actually. If we were ranking months,
if we were ranking months, that would be, it'd be right up there.
I mean, I really love January 2006.
Yeah.
All right. Tony. You get your fourth and fifth round picks.
This is it. The end of the line here. I'm trying to decide what I want to do in the fourth round. I got to tell you guys, I put together a list of 12 plays, and I still have 7, 8 left here to choose from. So, yeah, I'm not sure where I'm going to go here.
Okay, so question here.
Yeah.
After the draft is done and we're yucking it up in the final segment, do we get to bring up the plays that were still on our board?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes, of course. Where am I going here? All right, I'm going to go with my favorite play from the early 2000s. This was 2003, I believe.
Oh, my God.
You son of a bitch.
The Steelers were about to lose in the playoffs.
You son of a bitch.
In the playoffs to the Cleveland Browns. Unbelievable that game. That whole game is so stupid. But the best play, of course, is the draw to Chris Fumatu Maafala for the go-ahead touchdown. The Steelers going to win that game. Yep. Thank goodness. Could you imagine an alternate reality where the Steelers had lost to a, you know, 3 years out of expansion Browns team? No, thank you. So I don't want to live in that reality. Thankfully, for Chris Fumatu Maafala, we do not. And as my last pick, I will pick a play. I don't even know if it's on you guys' board. I don't think it's on anybody's board. I'm picking the Jesse James touchdown against the New England Patriots.
What?
Yeah. Now, I will tell you guys why. And I don't want to, like, you know, derail this whole segment here, but I will explain that pick in the last one. But screw you, NFL. Screw you, NFL, for screwing us out of that play. I'm picking it anyway. It's a protest pick against the NFL.
Wow. Bold. Adam, I don't know how you top that, at least the wildness of that pick.
I got two. We could go with the Rabona kick, onside kick.
Yes, yes.
Or the Antonio Brown stepping out of bounds on the backyard school friggin' play at the end in the snow against the Dolphins. Like,
man, I so thought he scored. I remember just looking at that like, he did it! I can't believe it!
I was furious. Like, he clearly stepped out of bounds, but I was furious with the officials that they didn't rule that a touchdown so they go back and look at it, because that was back when the rules were all hokey. But anyway, yeah. I digress.
Pressure's
I've
on.
I've gone all championship moments and then the immaculate reception. So I'll go one that just has to twist the knife in a team that thinks their arrival's back. And I'll go with AB getting his head crushed against Cincinnati.
Oh my God.
The subsequent meltdown of Pac-Man Jones that wound up setting up the field goal.
I like that. I actually like that. I didn't have that written down, but that's a great fifth round pick.
Oh, it felt good. I mean, my God, you know, there are years where you can have fun, even if you don't win the Super Bowl. In that game, as much as it sucked for a while, oh, God, did that feel good for Steelers fans to win that one.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember I was watching that game with my old man in the living room, and I remember he was just mad, and he was just ranting, and he got up from his chair, and he's like, because after Burfict intercepted Landry Jones, he was like, this sucks. I can't believe this. This is ridiculous. That, you know, they should have put this team away when they were up 16-0. And then I just say, Dad, the ball's out. The ball's out. He's like, what are you talking about? Get the hell out of here. And I'm like, no, they've got the ball. And he's like, oh, excuse me. And he sits right the hell down.
I stormed out of the bar. I actually stormed out of the bar I was at. I didn't see the Shazier fumble. I had a friend text me and go, yo, are you seeing this? And I'm like, seeing what, man? Landry just threw a pick. I'm out. He's like, no, the Steelers have the ball. And I had to pull over and watch it from the car at a Buffalo.
Oh, my God.
You Stu Gutsed it from the bar. Stu Gutsed, like, left game six of the Heat when Ray Allen hit the three against the Spurs in the finals. And you did it from the bar.
I did. It's a low point for me.
Okay. Wow. Wow. You guys went off the board with your picks. So I'm not.
You have wide open here.
Yeah. You guys were the meltdown. Tony, you hit Antonio Brown in the head. Adam, you went and touched the referee, and then you guys gave me this obvious pick that I get here. It is a play that is in, I'm pretty sure, every Yinzer's living room or den, wherever they watch their games. It is a picture that is on everyone's walls in Pittsburgh. I know it was on my grandmother's wall. It's somewhere on my dad's wall. I believe it's somewhere on my mom's wall. But this has to be in there. It's Jerome Bettis trucking Brian Urlacher into the snow of Heinz Field. Just a legendary moment in a game that they absolutely have to have. That everyone was saying the Bears were all that. They were going to be – they were the baddest. They had the best defense. Brian Urlacher was supposed to be like the next Ray Lewis. And old man Jerome Bettis in his final year just plows over him and then takes another guy with him as he goes into the end zone in a huge win that sparked the win streak where the Steelers eventually go on to win Super Bowl 40. So I argue that, Adam, you missed on the one on maybe the most iconic of the plays of that entire season. You went with all the chalk plays in the playoffs. This is the one that everyone's like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I totally missed whenever I get the play that got the guy to Super Bowl MVP. That's fine. Okay. That's
fine. All right, those are our picks. Again, just to recap, Tony's picks were Harrison's pick six in the Super Bowl, Troy Polamalu's pick six in the AFC Championship game, Antonio Brown's helmet catch against the Ravens in the AFC Divisional Round of 2010, Fumatumaafala's draw touchdown in the Browns playoff game of 2003, and the Jesse James catch that wasn't a catch against the Patriots.
Oh, it was a catch. Oh, how dare you, Chris. It was a catch.
I mean, we all know, but you have – okay. I have to get through this so we can get to the next segment. Adams' picks were the immaculate reception, Ben Roethlisberger's tackle of Nick Harper, Hines Ward's touchdown in Super Bowl 40, Willie Parker's touchdown in Super Bowl 40, and Cincinnati's utter meltdown in the 2016 playoffs. Then my picks were Santonio Holmes' Super Bowl 43 touchdown, Lynn Swann's Super Bowl catch, ridiculous Super Bowl catch and double coverage in Super Bowl 10, Ryan Clark destroying Willis McGahee in AFC Championship game, the immaculate extension from Antonio Brown, and Jerome Bettis trucking Brian Urlacher. We're gonna defend our picks and argue against each other's right after this. All right, welcome back to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, joined by Tony Serino and Adam Crowley. Now, we just did Fantasy Draft Friday. I'm not going to say all the picks again because it's a long list of words because they're plays and you have to identify the players in the years. But you heard them in the last segment. If you're still listening, that means you know what they are. The list is also on the Locked On Steelers Facebook group, so you can pick who you thought did the best job of picking the greatest Steelers plays of all time. Just go on Facebook, search Locked On Steelers, ask to join the group. I'll add you, and then you can vote. The poll will be up from 9 a.m. Friday morning Eastern time to 7 p.m. Sunday evening Eastern time. So with that, we have our picks up. We know what they are. Adam, you didn't pick first, but I'll give you a chance to attack slash defend first and set the tone of the conversation. Why are your picks better than everyone else's?
Well, historically, I might have had what is considered by many to be the greatest play in NFL history. I mean, so that's got to be worth something right there at the beginning. I think the terrible tackle is so huge with Ben Roethlisberger bringing down Nick Harper because it was one of those moments where you're going to have an aneurysm and then you don't have an aneurysm. And so, like, you're kind of laying on the ground, writhing, and you're, like, pseudo-dead and alive, like Voldemort at the end of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. But you wind up coming away from that game happy. So, like, I love the emotional roller coaster. Randall L. Ward, I think, is the only play of that game that was beautiful from a slow-motion NFL film standpoint. Willie Parker, which was my fourth pick, his Super Bowl run was beautiful from a blocking standpoint, and then just simply from a record-setting standpoint. And then my fifth pick was just enough. You know, Steelers don't always have to win the Super Bowl, okay? You go A-B, getting killed over the middle of the field, and then the Bengals just peeing down their legs in hysterical fashion. I mean, to see a rival falter like that, that's pretty good.
Pretty good stuff there. Tony –
Yeah.
What puts your picks over the top? And I'm sure you'll get to addressing your Jesse James.
The Jesse James play. Yeah. Well, because okay, here's the thing. And I'm actually surprised because I was worried coming in. I put together a list of all plays like from, you know, quote unquote my era, right? Ever since I started watching, 1992 to now, right? That's my frame of reference. So, you know, I thought coming in that you guys were going to pick a lot of plays from the 70s, and I get accused of pandering to our younger audience of picking all these plays that are recent. The thing about plays, though, for me, is it's so important about the context of the team, yes, of the team that they were playing, right? The moment. I don't have context for those plays in the 70s, right? Because I didn't watch that game. So I can go back and try to relive it through highlights or watching old YouTube footage and whatnot. But again, you lose some of that. So I knew I wasn't going to pick any of that. So let's just go through, right? You go through the Harrison pick six. I mean, this is a play in the Super Bowl. The Steelers are winning. What was the score at the time? 10-7. It's first and goal. I mean, people forget that play was on first and goal. The Cardinals have first and goal from the 1 yard line. They are going to go in and score that touchdown. I mean, I know that 2008 defense was fantastic, but it's unlikely that they're going to get a stop there at the goal line. And so to turn that play around, what should have been a 14-10 lead for the Arizona Cardinals going into that halftime, instead is a 17-7 lead for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And for all people to do it, it's James Harrison. I mean, James Harrison, you know, not a slow guy, but not known as a speed rusher by any stretch. And yet he's the one that takes the pick and goes 100 yards for a touchdown. I truly believe that is the greatest play in Steelers history. Polamalu's pick six. Look, this one is, for me, is like right behind it. Just from like a moment, like, you know, watching it with my family. My uncle has this gigantic living room, and he has this thing he loves to do when he gets nervous, where he has like this kind of like plush football. And my recollection of the Polamalu interception isn't even so much watching the play, but watching my uncle see the interception from the kitchen and come running in, slapping the ball, screaming, go, go, go. I mean, he's going so fast. We all thought he was going to go right through the television itself. He was running right alongside Polamalu. It was incredible to watch. The AB helmet catch, like that. I mean, again, you don't want to lose to a playoff or to a division rival in the playoffs. And that AB catch was spectacular. On 3rd and 19, if the Steelers don't convert there, they have to punt to the Ravens. Maybe the Ravens have it deep in Steelers or in their own territory. Maybe that game goes to overtime. We'll never know because AB made an incredible catch on 3rd down and 19 to set them up for that touchdown. The Fuamaku Malafala touchdown, against a kind of a very similar play to the AB thing, in that you don't want to lose to your division rival in the playoffs. And you especially don't want to lose to an expansion Cleveland Browns team. And I know they were 3 years in at that point, but boy, I mean, that was going to be such an embarrassing loss if the Steelers lose to Kelly Holcomb, of all people. So that Fuamatu Malafala touchdown, the crowd goes wild.
To the Jesse James play. That's the one we want to hear about.
The Jesse James play. Because you think, okay, think about all those moments, right? Think about, you know, how you were feeling after AB caught that play, and you're, oh, the Steelers are going to win this game, right? Polamalu pick six, the Steelers are going to win this game. Harrison pick six, okay, we're going in halftime with a 10-point lead. Now, remember the moment, okay? Because I was going to pick Juju's 90-yard catch or the 75-yard catch and run in that play. But I thought to myself, no, because the actual play that every Steeler fan went absolutely ballistic on was the Jesse James touchdown, because you watch him catch it, you watch him go into the end zone, and every Steeler fan is going nuts. Because what does this mean? The Steelers finally get over the hump against the New England Patriots, a team that they just could not beat. Not only did they get over the hump, they got over the hump in one of their biggest games against this team, a game that was going to decide home field advantage. Tomlin had gotten so much criticism for talking about how, you know, this is going to be part one of two and whatnot. And they did it. They got over the hump. They won that game even though they gave up the lead late. It was a spectacular play, a spectacular moment in Steelers history. And I don't care. And, you know, what the NFL robbed us of is that moment, right? I mean, I know that play ends up getting overturned, but that was a touchdown. In fact, that's the last time in NFL history the NFL ever called their stupid catch rule, because they changed it from that. They knew that rule was so bad, they changed it from that point forward. Go watch the Super Bowl that year when the Eagles, yep, beat the Patriots. They changed the rule, and Al Riveron admits it after the game that they changed the rule after that. That's the last time it gets called. It's a robbed moment for us. We should remember that play for the play that it was. That team got over the hump against the Patriots. They should have had home field advantage. That season gets remembered for losing embarrassingly to the Jaguars at home when they should have played the Titans. They should have beaten the Titans and hosted Tom Brady and that Patriots team again in Heinz Field with a chance for that team to go on and play in the Super Bowl. It's a pity that the NFL ruined that play, but I don't think it should take away from what that team and what that play meant for this team.
Wow. Tony said, I'm gonna forego picking the actual best plays, and I'm going to sit here and on my soapbox and attack the NFL. Smart campaign move, sir. I have to say.
Hey, look. Look, it's a smart campaign move. But if we're voting on who's going to win this thing, Tony picked one of the absolute most disappointing plays in Steelers history. Like, it might be number one disappointing plays in Steelers history. Like, if we're doing a draft of plays that made us rip our hearts out and then throw ourselves into the Allegheny River, it's the Jesse James play against the Patriots. That. So, actually, I think, you know, what this does is it kind of wipes away all the good that Tony did.
Yeah. He just brought all the pain and misery. Like, he might as well just pick Neil O'Donnell throwing to Larry Brown. You know,
I do know where Tony's coming from, because there was real tangible joy in that moment. And by the letter of the law in today's NFL, the Steelers beat the Patriots. And, boy, does that season have a totally different narrative. But you're going to hate to hear this. Like, Jesse, just catch it. Don't go to the ground.
Yeah.
Just walk in. Dude, catch it, man, and then lay there and make him pry it out of your cold, dead hands, Jesse.
Yeah.
It's so true.
I remember I was in the press box for that one. I was watching that, and I just remember looking at the replay, and I just saw with you know the replay and the ball coming loose, and I was like, that can't be. He's already across the line. It doesn't matter. And then when they called that, I was in my mind, I was like, the Steelers did it. They exercised the demon. They took out the Patriots and in their most patriot modes, Bill Belichick
asterisk
and Tom Brady
asterisk.
They were no more. And then all of a sudden, the officials threw him right back in. And even Bill Belichick
asterisk
admits that he thought the game was over.
It was over. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, it was done. We thought it was a loss.
You want to hear another story? So the overturn, I was watching the game with I lived with my brother at the time, and we were watching the game together, and I realized that they were going to overturn it before he did, right? Or he just kind of was like in denial that they're going to overturn it. Because when Romo starts saying, ooh, you know, they might be thinking about going to the ground thing, I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? They are going to overturn it. Like, no, they're not going to overturn it. They're not going to overturn it. When they overturned it, I've never heard a person scream an F-bomb as loud as he did. I mean, he went full volume and then went right into his room and slammed the door as hard as I've ever heard someone slam a door. He was I don't think he's gotten over it to this day.
And I understand him. I understand him. In Adam's picks, he picked the Ben tackle. I remember I was in my dad. The Steelers had already overcome the bad Polamalu interception call. The Steelers had – Joey Porter had just sacked Peyton Manning twice.
Yep.
And everyone thinks it's all great. Like, we're all like, woo, they did this. And my dad, similar to how your uncle, Tony, had a plush football, my dad had this massage pillow that had like a little engine in it that if you turned it on, it would like vibrate and you could put it on your neck and it would really help you. So he that was his good luck thing. He would hold on to it. And when Bettis fumbled in that moment, he screams the F-bomb and spikes this pillow into the ground. And you could hear the engine in this pillow go, and it just died. It never worked again.
Wow.
So I totally empathize with that moment. But, guys, let's be real. I got the best picks. For one.
Let's hear it.
For one, without even intending to, you guys just gave it to me. I have the picks that represent the most different Super Bowl wins. Adam, you went ballistic on Super Bowl 40. Tony, you picked two picks from Super Bowl 43. I have Super Bowl 40, the game-winning play of Super Bowl 43. I have one of the most memorable plays in Steelers history with Super Bowl 10. That's two, so I addressed the 70s. I have Ryan Clark's hit in the AFC Championship game on the way to Super Bowl 43, so I stick there. But then I also get Bettis' trucking of Urlacher for Super Bowl 40. I addressed three different Super Bowl runs. You guys addressed one. What are you thinking? There's so many legendary picks to be made throughout Steelers history, and you guys pigeonholed yourselves. That's so ridiculous. And who cares about Fuamatu Maafala is play in 2003? You can go back and you can look like, man, what are some plays that actually, like, got the Steelers something? You could have said Joey Porter.
Oh, yeah, like the Immaculate Extension. I mean, great playoff run they had there.
No. But they needed to win that division game over the Ravens. I think that was a more momentum.
Oh, you'd rather them lose a playoff game to the Browns? What are we talking about?
Okay, first of all, Fulmonte walked in. The greatness of that play, it was an average play.
We're talking all counts.
But guess what? You know what counts? What counts better is something that counts, but also took 1,000 more times the effort. Antonio Brown catching it, getting two defenders in his
face. All right, Carter.
The play.
All right.
While being having his face mask pulled backwards, did Fulmonte have to go over two defenders? No. Did he have to go
because people were scared. They were scared of Fu
in his way. Come on, man. It's got to be Antonio Brown over there. That was just the let me and win Christmas. And everyone remembers. Do you even remember what the announcers said when Fulmonte crossed the plane? We all remember Mike Tirico. That could win them the division. Like, come on, man. Like, that's just get out of here with your nonsense here. Carter, the Immaculate Extension definitely gets that respect.
Carter.
What, Adam? What?
Okay. You don't have the best play from Super Bowl 43. You didn't pick the best Lynn Swann catch from Super Bowl 10.
I totally
Ryan
did.
Ryan Clark's hit on Willis McGahee, I mean, was really an affront to football of the days of now. I mean, that is just illegal as all hell. The Immaculate Extension.
It's still great.
AB, piece of trash. I mean, that guy, get him the hell out of here. And then Bettis over Urlacher, I'll give it to you because it was great. And you could say it propelled the run. But at the same time,
Are you butting the bus?
Yes, and I'm taking a very long time butting this as well because I can't think of a reason why I don't like it.
The Bettis one? Hold on, I got the Bettis one right here. Listen, the Bettis one, if you're talking about like a play where we're sending someone to the shadow realm, I mean, you missed out on Juju's hit on Perfect, right? I thought that one should if you want to talk about an offensive player taking out, I mean, everything that Perfect had done to that point in Juju. You know,
Hines Ward on Rivers.
Yes, Hines Ward on Rivers. How about Vance McDonald taking out?
I was gonna say Ed Reed. That one to me is even Rivers. Yeah. Rivers was a rookie. Like that was just, and he even held Rivers' hand afterwards. Like I felt that I was just like dog. Like if I was Keith Rivers, my jaw may be broke, but F you, Hines. Like I'm gonna come back and get you someday. But
I know this is only one play, but if you could pick two plays, you would say Le'Veon Bell and what he did to Drake Kirkpatrick throughout his career.
Because, oh, my God.
Yeah. The stiff arm.
You could say Vance McDonald and how he ended Chris Godwin's career.
No, he did. He actually did. And yeah, so, I mean, like, you know, Adam makes a great point, right? You don't have the best play in Super Bowl 43. You don't have Lynn Swann's best catch. You don't even have the best
hit. You have his best catch.
You don't have AB's. Admittedly, you admitted you don't have AB's best catch. I do. And then Bettis trucked
it off debating
whether or not that's the best offensive hit. So, I mean, we accept your apology.
Dear audience, you see how they're ganging up on me? You see how they know that they don't have the better picks, so they have to band together to attack my list? That's the only way that they can try to convince you. Because you know, everyone, the
Carter,
best relief.
You picked a play where the Steelers were up 9 with, like, 0 time on the clock.
Yeah, like game's over.
Like who cares? Like the AFC Championship was won.
There were 4 minutes left when Willis McGahee was destroyed. Like
You think that 2008 defense was giving up 9 points to rookie Joe Flacco? How dare you?
I'm not saying they would, but I'm saying they didn't because they destroyed in the most an exclamation point hit.
You know what?
In the history of that rivalry, you know what? It has a lot of exclamation point hits.
I really thought that the Ravens were going to come back and win that game. So, actually, my number one is going to be Tyrone Carter's interception at the end.
Did Tyrone Carter destroy someone? And let me get this straight. Kelly Holcomb is part of your evaluations over there, Tony. I'm talking about Willis McGahee. I'm talking about
I don't want to lose to Kelly Holcomb. That's how important Foo's touchdown was.
But we're talking about the greatness of these moments.
Kelly Holcomb.
Antonio Brown had to get past Eric Weddle, an all-pro safety. Ryan Clark had to destroy Willis McGahee, a highly respected running back in the NFL. Bettis trucked Brian Urlacher, the guy that everyone was saying was going to be the next Ray Lewis. See, Antonio Holmes' catch of the Super Bowl, come on, like, get over it. He had to outperform
the Steelers. Hank Poteet at cornerback, okay?
Hank
Poteet was starting at cornerback for that Steelers team, and they found a way to win. That's a bigger accomplishment than anything on your list.
No, please. Get out of here. Anyway.
I have two that we didn't get to that are just some of my personal favorites.
Yeah.
Santonio against the Ravens, where they still bitch to this day because they say the ball didn't cross the plane in 2008.
That is legendary.
That was awesome because all week long, both those teams argued who had the better defense. And then the Ravens let the Steelers drive like 120 yards because there was a bunch of penalties too. And the Steelers score a touchdown, and they have the gall to bitch about the last inch. Like, oh, we're the best defense in football. And the Steelers drive 95 yards, and they complain because, oh, that ball didn't cross by an inch. Get the hell out of here. And then 2010, Troy Polamalu, the fumble that he forced on Joe Flacco because for whatever reason the Ravens were like, let's put a sidecar over there.
Yeah.
Like those two moments were great.
Yep.
Funny story about that play with Polamalu. I'm in Emlyn Hall at Chain University. I upgraded to the honors dorm. And I'm sitting there watching this game. I'm freaking out. I'm a senior. Now I'm in a suit because I'm coming from like a student government event. I haven't eaten all day, like because I had bandages. Like I was like out of my element. So mind you, it's also like 11 p.m. So like I am.
Did you say band?
I was in the marching band, the jazz band, and a whole bunch of other bands at Chain University. And I did student government, and I did NAACP. Like I wore like 1,000 hats at that school. But point being, I hadn't eaten all day, and it was like 11 p.m. And I'm sitting there stressed out, and I remember just like thinking, like, God, they need to win this game. No, because you can't stand Baltimore. You know, that was the prime of the Steelers Ravens hate.
Yep.
And when Polamalu knocks the ball out, I just jump to my feet and say, "Ball!" The next thing that I know, I am on the ground, and my friends are like, "Chris, get up, Chris, get up." And I guess I passed out, and that my friend, all I remember is seeing their faces. I don't remember coherently anything until Ben had to escape Suggs a few plays later. But my friends told me that the first question I asked when I came to was, "Did we get the ball?" So that absolutely gets it just for how I passed out in the middle of it because I was famished, and I definitely my blood sugar or my was probably not in a good place. Don't ever not eat things just because you're in college. That was
well. Usually you ban people. I mean, you pass out whenever you see boobs for the first time.
Well, first of all, you have no idea what it's like to be because you see all the boobs in the band. Okay, we're getting way too off. I can't. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, other plays we had. I actually did consider. I was telling you guys this during the break. I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to go back to the Cowher well, but I seriously considered taking the onside kick in Super Bowl 30 because, I mean, yes, it goes back to my, like, you know, I love Cowher thing, but that was a moment where it's like, when did you believe that the Steelers could actually pull that upset off, right? And for me, it was when they did when they pulled off the onside kick and they got it. You know, my dad and I were watching it together, and we're like, they might actually pull this thing off. They might actually come away with a win. Now, of course, you know, Bill O'Donnell had something else to say about that, but I considered that one. I considered the AB dropkick on the Browns. I considered Martavis' playoff touchdown. I mean, that one kind of gets lost. It's a spectacular play, but it just gets lost because, you know, there's so many other things to talk about in that game. Adam, as you pointed out, the AB perfect stuff at the end. Townsend's pick six against the Cowboys in 2008.
Oh, it's a great one.
Great play.
Yeah. Yeah. That one, like, started Renegade, basically. So,
Whoa. See, and you lose a point. Because that did not start Renegade.
No, I said it basically. I mean, it was the play that, like, defined Renegade.
No. Sir.
Okay.
Renegade started in the very game that you picked in the Browns playoff game.
Yes.
How dare you desecrate the honor of Renegade? It happened during the 2005 run and part of that Super Bowl. How dare you disrespect Renegade? Fans and listeners,
here we go.
He is here a charlatan in our midst. Okay. He's already told you that he believes Matt Ryan is a better quarterback than Ben Roethlisberger.
Who? In 2017.
He's already called himself Tony the Hater. He said he thought he wanted to send Mike Tomlin to Washington to play for the team that's about to
Why was the Redskins jet at Pittsburgh International? I mean, no one is denying
these things. He is a charlatan in our midst. Do not vote for Tony Cerino. He locked on Steelers.
Strong. I like it. I want to know why Washington's plane was at Pittsburgh International. Someone needs to tell me. I still don't understand it. He may still be the coach one day.
Well, All right, everyone. Thanks. Thanks to these guys for being on the show. If you want to vote for who you thought won, again, go to Locked On go to Facebook, search Locked On Steelers, ask to join the group. The poll is posted there and only there. It'll be up all throughout Friday, Saturday, and Sunday into 7 p.m. So make sure you get your vote cast. You can also talk about it with other listeners. It's a nice, fun group that we have there. We're over 607 people strong. We have these guys in the group right now. So if you ever wanted to chat with them and myself, we're there as well. But thanks so much to both of you for coming on the show and doing this. This was a lot of fun. Tony, let people know where they can find more use.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. And you can find me on YouTube. My new YouTube show is AFC North Talk. We are back after a couple month hiatus there. We're going to try and do, I think, every other week now until the season starts, or I guess if the season starts, we'll see. But you can find us there. Search AFC North Talk on YouTube. We are live on Monday nights.
And Adam, thanks so much for you coming back on the show. You can now go brag to Wes that you've been on just as much as him. I hope to hear that at some point. But Adam, let people know where they can find you on social media and find more of your work.
Check me out at _AdamCrowley on Twitter. Also ESPNPGH.com. I write a lot of bad blogs there. But if you click on the bad blogs, then it helps me get like bonuses and stuff. So just click those. And then 4 to 7 weekdays on AM radio, you will never find it, but you can listen on the iHeartRadio app. And, you know, that probably doesn't really matter all that much either, because we're all going to die one day. So, but just, you know, find me on Twitter, because for a moment or two, it makes me feel okay.
That was the most lackluster. Guys, I'm telling you right now, Adam Crowley has the best radio show in Pittsburgh. So, we'll say it like that. Go listen to his show 4-7. It gets me through the week. I'll say that much. Adam, that's how you promote your own show.
I mean, that's very kind. That's a really nice thing for you to say. I didn't know that you felt that way, and I appreciate it. And I love being on the show. But yeah, we're all still gonna die one day.
Anyways,
it's an uplifting show.
I can't believe. Yeah, I tried to bring you up, and then you brought everyone else down with the death thing. But you know, hey, you know, I tried my best to promote your stuff. But anyways, you guys know you can find me on Twitter at Carter Critiques. If you follow me, I'll follow you back. Thanks to all those who do follow me and follow the show. Subscribe to the show on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere podcasts are hosted. Also, if you want to support the show, please leave us a 5-star review along with a positive comment. Doing show really helps out the show and gets the word out there about what we're doing here with Locked On Steelers. And if you do so, you will get a shout out at the end of the show reading your comment, so long as it is safe for work. Thanks again for listening. Hope everyone has a good weekend. I'll be back in your ears on